Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever you happen to be listening to us in the great wide world connected by the internet. It's the last three guys to do a podcast, our wrap-up 2018 edition. This is episode 15, if I'm not mistaken, and we are here. It could be 14. It's one of the two. I'm John Morgo, along with
Daniel Bolton
and
Leon Brown.
Thank you very much for joining us here on our final podcast for 2018, and we are joined now by the Georgia State women's basketball head coach, Mr. Gene Hill. Georgia State is in his first year as head coach of the Panthers. They just wrapped up the non-conference schedule, played at Tallahassee at Florida State. Daniel knows that institution very well. Okay. He's a Seminole fan. I tried to get him to come down with me, but he didn't want to make that trip. And so
I had Morgan County basketball.
Yeah, you had Morgan County basketball. Yes, you did. So. And again, this is the end of the non-conference schedule. Sun Belt season starts on Thursday as the Panthers host the Mavericks from UT Arlington. So, Coach, first of all, thank you very much for joining us, and Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays to you.
No problem. Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays to you all. Hope 2018 was good, and appreciate the opportunity to be on.
Thanks. Well, we are so glad that you were able to take time out of your busy schedule to help us out here. Again, Georgia State in the non-conference schedule goes 6-5. Some pretty big wins for you, Coach, especially on the road against some quality teams, Florida Atlantic, Florida International to start off the season. A big win against Kennesaw State, and you beat up the North Carolina Central and Bethune-Cookman. So overall, I got to say that this non-conference schedule, while it had its bumps and bumps in the road, it was pretty much a success for you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously anytime you come through with a winning record, you have to be pleased. So we're definitely excited about that. We face four Conference USA teams, so we knew that would be a challenge. And to get out of that battle at 2-2, I think was a good accomplishment for a team that's a veteran and years of experience, but new in what we're trying to do as far as our system and our philosophy and way of doing things. So definitely pleased with how things are progressing so far with the young ladies, and looking forward to jumping into the conference right now.
Well, let's break down some players. First of all, we'll start with at the top with Jada Lewis. Again, sat out pretty much 90% of last season with a foot injury, took a medical redshirt back as a sophomore, and pretty much left taking up where she left off in her freshman season, and had a couple of 20-point games, had a 30-point game against NC Central during the holiday tournament. And it's really kind of funny to me, Coach, and it really is amazing to me that Jada is not listed on any Sun Belt preseason all-conference team, first, second, or third. It's like the whole conference just completely forgot about what she did her freshman year, and she's stepping up where she left off.
Yeah, you know, obviously those polls at the beginning, you know, a lot of times coaches, they go back and they look at who was postseason winners, and they nominate a lot of those people. And unfortunately for her, sitting out last year may have caused her some of those looks on the preseason award list. But, you know, she's come out and really performed at a high level, and is leading us in scoring, but also so just leading us in type of in her effort and what type of work she does off the court. So we're excited about her. We regardless of what preseason list she may not be on, we know how important she is to what we're trying to do here and our future here at Georgia State.
And now let's talk it over about what your presence, the players in the middle, specifically Walnetta Wright, who and Allison Johnson, both players sat out last year for via transfer rules. Walnetta Wright, a redshirt graduate now from Texas A&M, and Allison Johnson from Kennesaw State, just up the road from where we are right now. Both those players seem to be filling the hole in the middle, the rebounding hole that Georgia State really kind of lacked last season.
No question about it. I mean, you had those two players, and then as we mentioned, Jada, who sat out last year, and those are three kids who are starting for. So it's basically a new team with that those three additions. And Wynata Wright is a very athletic 6'2 post player who can score around the basket. It does a great job of finding the rebound outside of her area. And then Allison Johnson, same thing. Just a great athlete. You know, she brings some of that international flair in with some of her footwork, and so she's able to handle the ball and beat some of the bigger defenders off the dribble, as you was able to see yesterday at Florida State. But just again, toughness also is something else she brings to us. So definitely those two kids was a big additions to have, and we're really lucky to have them.
Coach, if there's any one, in terms of what I've seen, if there's any one sort of deficiency, sort of lack that this team has, it's at the point guard position. I noticed you used Madison Irving, you used Janessa Murphy, both those girls. Well, Janessa was here last year, Madison Irving, right, another transfer from Mars Hill College. It's what exactly are you looking for in terms of a point guard? Do you want someone who will get a lot of assists, or are you just looking for someone who will distribute the ball around?
Well, you know, we kind of talk about players as being guards and wings and post players, and I guess in traditional terms, our point guard would be listed as a guard for us, a ball handler. And unfortunately, right now, you know, we have Jada Lewis and, as you mentioned, Janessa Murray, who has to play some at the traditional point guard role. The only true point guard would be Madison, and she's doing a great job. But obviously, she can't fill that role for 40 minutes. So we're having to do it a little bit by your committee. But in our style of play, we hope that we can kind of share that by committee and run a lot of things freely in our four-out, one-in offense. That's something that the players are still getting accustomed to running. I think they're used to a more traditional offense style where you have that one point guard doing this role and the other people doing their roles and stuff. So we're trying to kind of get them adjusted to what we want to do here. I think next year you'll see Madison and Jada more comfortable in that role. And then we'll also add some kids through recruiting who can also help in that position.
Yeah, you have a very good, very deep recruiting class. We don't really have time to mention all the girls coming in. Joelle Johnson from Male High School in Louisville, Emma Drash from St. Pius, Kendi Powell now at Roswell, I think she was at St. Francis, and she moved over to Roswell High School. So you definitely have some names coming in, and you really need them, because this is very much a senior-oriented team, although there are some exceptions with Jada still having 2 years left. And speaking of seniors, I want to talk to you a little bit about two of the seniors that Georgia State uses, Kira Henry and KK Williams. Williams, was kind of a forward, we're now playing more of a guard. She's trying to develop her outside shot. And Kira Henry, she just goes physical every time I see her in action. She's just crashing everything, trying to get that ball in the hoop.
Yeah, no question about it. And again, you know, it's a difficult situation for those young ladies to come in their senior year and be accustomed to playing one style for 3 years, and then in your last year being thrown into a whole new system. But I have to commend both of them for their work ethic and their attitude and trying to adjust in what we're trying to do. KK has had some big games for us. She made a huge three for us at Bethune-Cookman at a big time there, and so we definitely need her to continue to work on that outside shot and be a little more consistent there. And then Kier also, her versatility, being able to play a guard position or a wing, and even at sometimes we put her down at the post to back up Allison Johnson. So definitely a lot of things being thrown at those two seniors, but you know, their attitude has been really being great at it, and we're really excited that they've been able to experience some success here this year.
We're speaking with Georgia State women's basketball head coach Gene Hill on The Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast. I'm John Morgan. Now, Daniel Bolton, I believe, has a question for you.
Yes, sir. Coach, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, Daniel. Daniel, you mentioned you didn't want to make that drive down in Tallahassee. I tell you, in that fourth quarter, I didn't want to be there either.
See, great minds think alike. Yeah. But you had to be there, coach.
I know.
You're coaching the team, man. You're coaching the team. Listen, let's take away this game, okay?
Okay, all right.
From you guys come in at 6-5. Of course, all of it was non-conference play. Were there any positives that you saw from your team in non-conference play that you could possibly see going forward as you enter conference play?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of positives. As a coach, you know, we always want to do more and be better and stuff. But, you know, one thing I tell the team all the time is that you're never as good as you think you are, and you're never as bad as you think you are. You're kind of somewhere in between and stuff. So we have to acknowledge that we've seen a lot of growth from, you know, even in our scrimmage game to now and stuff, to the Florida State game. You know, I watched that film this morning and actually saw some positive things, you know, again, that we wasn't doing in the first week of play. So, yeah, I think we could take some things where the ladies are now kind of understanding what we want. I think we're able to do better in some situations now. They have been in those situations where it's overtime games or, you know, games where we've had been down and had to come back. So I think all those types of situations can help you in the conference play, because when you get in conference play, when it's teams that are really familiar with you, you're playing them twice, you're going to face those situations a lot and everything. So I think we had a great non-conference schedule to prepare us for that.
How you doing, Coach? This is Leon Brown.
Hey, Leon.
All right. I noticed that for the most part, your roster is pretty, but you guys have done a great job as far as getting a lot of great local talent and nourishing them.
Mm-hmm.
But what I noticed is that with Francesca Minnelli on your team,
yeah,
is that going to be a new trend you guys are going to start as far as trying to go international with your players?
Well, you know, Fran was she was a player who was already here, so I can't take credit for her. But if you go back and look at my track record from my days at NC State, we recruited some international kids, and also at my days at Georgia Tech. So I do have some international experience as far as recruiting. It's been funny when we've played some of these teams, a few of the international kids or kids that I recruited at other schools and everything. So we definitely will look at international a little bit. I mean, being in Atlanta and being also Georgia State with the College of Business and international students are really looking for top-rated programs, and we offer those at Georgia State. So it gives us opportunity to recruit internationally. So I guess to answer your question, yeah, we will explore that, but we want to also make sure that we take care of home base also. Absolutely. We want kids in Georgia to know that, hey, you can get a great education and play in a top program in state. You know, you don't have to go far away from home, and so we'll beat the bushes around here, but at the same time, we'll travel any distance for the best available player.
And coach, you mentioned it about playing a team twice as we get into Sun Belt Conference play. Mm-hmm. Now, when you were at NC State, again, ACC much different from when you left and when it started. It's, I believe, 15 teams right now.
Yeah.
And it's a 16-game regular season conference schedule. So you only play, say, a team twice. And that's going to be two teams twice. And that'll be different
twice,
from the Sun Belt, where you're going to be playing eight teams twice.
Right.
So
right.
How does that factor into your preparation going into this? Does it change anything?
Well, you know, it's good and bad. I guess from a scouting standpoint, it's good in that you don't have to do that many scout reports over and over and stuff, you know, because you know you're going to play that team, you make adjustments and everything and stuff. But then again, on the bad side of it and everything, you know, that team is that familiar with you also. So you got to make sure that you really do a good job in disguising things and making adjustments and just the familiarity that each team I have with you. So, you know, I think the biggest thing that we're trying to adjust to as a staff is the one day in between. You know,
right,
that's one thing that's going to be a big adjustment for us and everything. You know, I'm accustomed to at least having 2 days. So that game on Saturday, that's a big game. You have to make sure that you prepare your kids. And I think when you're doing that, you have to make sure that in your style of play that you're not doing so much. You can't be changing too many things because you're only going to have one day to prepare. So I think when you're putting in your system at the beginning of the year and what you want to do and everything, you have to take that into account, you know. And that's one thing we tried to do and everything, you know. We wanted to take that into account. We couldn't be a team that, you know, one day we was going to press for 40 minutes and the next day we was going to be sitting in the zone for, you know, for 40 minutes. So we had to be able to create a style of play defensively, offensively, that could go against different types of teams, and that our players could make adjustments based on the opponent.
Speaking with Georgia State women's basketball head coach Gene Hill and the last three guys to do a podcast, and I think you're absolutely right on that, Coach, especially sometimes in the Sun Belt play where you get two teams back-to-back that have totally different styles of play. I'm thinking of South Alabama and Troy. Troy with the run and gun, South Alabama with more of a plotting offense. And another difference, Coach, is you would face like an Asia Durr only once a season from Louisville, but you face Antoinette Lewis from South Alabama twice.
Right,
so so that kind of makes it a little harder.
Oh, no question about it. You know, again, you have to game plan a little more and trying to figure out how to stop those players and everything. And then you go through that nightmare, you know, Asia Durr, you only deal with it one time. Now you have to deal with the nightmare defending those type of players twice. So, yeah, that's definitely a lot more sleepless nights.
Hey, Coach, this is Leon.
Hey, Leon.
All right. So, and I remember you were speaking about running the, you guys are introducing the four out and one in offense.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe that, you know, with such a high scoring potential that someone like Jada Lewis will be able to, you know, she'll be able to prosper in such a high octane style offense?
Yeah, you know, and it's been, that's funny you say that. At the beginning, you know, she was trying to adjust also to understand, you know, what was her role in it. And the one thing I told her, just trust me, continue to do what we're asking you to do, and you'll see as you, you know, become more comfortable with it, you'll have plenty of scoring opportunities. And I think she's now figuring that out. And then the one thing about it, you know, is as you have, as other players around you have, you know, scoring opportunity, it only increases your opportunity because they then can't focus on one player. You know, so that's one thing that we're really excited about. You know, right now we do have some shortcomings in some areas just from a personnel standpoint and versus a style standpoint where our four player in our system needs to be able to shoot the three. And in the past, their four player hasn't had to shoot the three. So that kind of, you know, we've had to make some adjustments there. But I think next year when we got a four player who's coming in who can really shoot the three, that's going to open it up more. And so a player like Jada Lewis, she's going to even have more opportunities because that's going to really space the floor more and open it up where they can't double team and sit in gaps to play her and everything. So it's definitely an adjustment for kids if they never played in it. But once they really get what you're trying to do and buy into it, they really seem to enjoy it.
Yeah, because I was wondering, you know, that four out is like the present. But, you know, we're talking about potentially even running five out. You know, I'm pretty sure that in teams that you believe that, you know, hey, I know as professionals, we like to look at everybody equal and like that, but, you know, sometimes if you're stepping on the gas and you're one of those games, you might be up by like 15, let's take it to 30, you might run a one or five out and start running the score up. You know, I know you got to be licking your chops on that.
Yeah, well, you know, another thing, another reason that, you know, the four out is being so good for us in the past, you know, when I said NC State, you know, when we first got to NC State, you know, we wasn't able to recruit the type of kids that they're recruiting right now. I mean, they're currently ninth in the nation, just had the, you know, I think top seven recruiting class. Well, it wasn't like that when we first got there and stuff, you know, yeah. That was progress. It took time. So when you're playing a system like a four out, especially at the post position. The post is a very, very competitive spot to recruiting. And, you know, if a kid's 6'2", 6'3", and she could run and catch, I mean, everyone in the country is trying to recruit her and they feel like they could coach her. Well, at this level, that really puts you down even farther on the list as far as getting big post players. Well, if you're running a four-out system, now you can take a 5'11 or 6-foot guard and put them out on the perimeter and let them play at that four spot. And like you said, sometimes if you get one who can shoot it at the five, even kind of play, do some five out things and stuff. So that's why it's really helped us out. And I think it fits us because it fits us as far as recruiting also.
Oh, yeah. I can imagine.
All right, Coach. Daniel, Leon, do you have any other further questions? Because I think we've taken up enough of the coach's time.
Yeah. We want to let Coach get on to the...
He has to prepare for Texas Arlington on Thursday. And Sierra Johnson, one of the best guards in the league before she was hurt, one of the best defensive guards I've seen. So that's gonna be a big test for you guys coming up on Thursday night.
Yeah, I watched their game this morning also versus Southern Cal, and that was a close game there. And so they definitely present a lot of challenges for us, multiple defenses and then multiple kids who can score. I'm going to go back here in a little bit and start watching more film for practice tomorrow. But I really appreciate the time and the support and everything you all are doing, not just for sports, but in particular for women's basketball as far as promoting it and everything. And I just want to say thank you guys and continue to work.
All right, no problem, Coach. Thanks so much. And again, best of luck Thursday, and I will speak with you for our pregame show Thursday afternoon.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right, take care. Coach. That was head coach Gene Hill, first year as head coach of the Georgia State Panthers women's basketball team, 6-5 this season. Couple of big wins, Florida Atlantic, Florida International down on their court. Couple of Conference USA squads. They gave Georgia Tech all they could handle, losing by 7, 78-71 a little earlier this season. Most points they've scored against the Jackets since way back in 1980. Then they won the Holiday Classic, beating North Carolina Central and Bethune-Cookman. Jada Lewis with 30 points against North Carolina Central Eagles. Last time a Georgia State player scored 30 or more way back in 2009. They had a little bit of a hiccup yesterday against Florida State, losing 79-43, a game the Panthers were actually ahead at one point, 31-30. But then I looked up, and it was a 17-1 Seminole run, made it 47-32. And then the fourth quarter, a 32-5 fourth quarter, and that allowed Florida State to pull ahead by that margin, 79-243. But again, Georgia State played tough for about 20 minutes, and his coach told me in the post-game conversation that aired on HD2 of Star 94.1 FM, which is your radio home of the Georgia State Panthers women's basketball team. You got to get that effort for a full 40 minutes.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. And you know what, Coach, he seems like he's enthused about the upcoming conference play. So, you know, Conference USA, that's going to be a very, very tough conference for him to conquer. But you know what? I think Georgia State will be fine. If Jada Lewis can, like Leon mentioned, if she can come out, she can anchor that team, I think that Georgia State will be just fine going into conference play, possibly in the tournament play.
Well, she's averaging over 16 points a game, had 15 yesterday in that Florida State loss. But again, she's going to be getting a lot of double-team looks, a lot of triple-team looks as more film gets processed on her. And I've always said that it's going to be important for Georgia State to be effective in the post, especially with Walnetta Wright, who is the 6'2 redshirt graduate on the mold of Tiffany Holston, who was here 2 years ago. But Allison Johnson is the more intriguing player. She's 6 foot, but she can move like a forward, she can shoot like a guard, she can definitely has a lot of intricacies to her game. And if she can play as well as I saw her play against Bethune-Cookman, where she had 17 points in that final game, 24 hours after the NC Central game. It'll give Georgia State an effective weapon. I think the Panthers, they were picked 10th in the Sun Belt, tied with Georgia Southern. I don't think they're going to be that bad. I really don't. I had them in my preseason polling. I had them around 7, and I was just being very conservative with that assessment. I think the league is losing a lot of talent, but also a lot of talent's coming back in terms of people who sat out all last year due to injury. I'm thinking, of course, of Sierra Johnson, also an intriguing player up at Appalachian State. Maddie Story also sat out the whole year due to a torn ACL. And you got to look at South Alabama. They went 11-0 in the non-conference schedule, including a victory over Alabama.
Yeah. That's huge.
That's huge. And of course, Troy is always an interesting squad because they're a one-trick pony, but boy, do they do it well. The run and gun, they want to take a shot within the first 8 seconds of their possessions.
Yeah. But also with Georgia State's playing style, running that four-out offense, with a player like Jada Lewis, that has a lot of potential because they're going, like teams will game plan for her.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the great ones figure it out.
Right.
And when you have at least four players in your team that can shoot your three, oh, man, that makes you very dangerous.
Well, one thing about Jada that has always impressed me is first of all, she even last year, even when she was rehabbing her injury, even when she was cleared to play but decided to take that medical redshirt, she was still the first person in the gym to do shoot around. Despite that. And also, another thing she does is on road trips, when we're driving to our next destination, she will move up into the coach's compartment and break down film.
Absolutely.
And that's something that's one of those things that can't be taught. You know, she is a very big competitor, and that is what you need. She's going to have to be the leader for this team, despite being only a sophomore. All right, well, we're going to leave women's basketball behind. Well, I'm sure, since I am the play-by-play voice, as if you may not know this, we've mentioned many times, of Georgia State women's basketball, so we will come back to this a little later on during the season and hope to talk some men's hoops as well. Georgia State, with a very big conference, I think they were 9-4 in their non-conference schedule, which just ended with a demolition of the Middle Georgia College Knights. I think it was 117-69, and I hope Scott Moe brought some barbecue up from Cochran.
Yeah.
anyway, because Middle Georgia State is the amalgamation of Middle Georgia College and Macon State University. They use a lot of the Macon campus for classes, but all the athletics are still based out of Cochran, which is 30 miles southeast of the Macon area, and they've got some very good facilities there. It was a crime not to use them. So anyway, well, as I said, we'll get back to that. A lot of breaking news in college football, and not just from what happened last night, where Clemson and Alabama once again asserted their dominance over everybody, but we've got Mark Richt retiring as the head coach of the University of Miami. And I wanted to get Leon, Daniel, I want to get your thoughts as to what, first of all, A, did he actually resign or was he forced to resign? And B, where does Miami go from here?
Oh, man. Well, you know, with Miami, 7-6.
Yeah, that's not going to cut it.
That's not going to cut it, especially for someone like Mark. You know, and coming off the Georgia situation, you know, we got to look at, like, what happened. Was it recruiting? Was it just game plan? Is the coaching style outdated? Is he, you know, will he have to go join Steve Spurrier? You know, I just don't understand. You know, because I'm looking at, you know, it's like a changing of the guard, so to speak. You know, I think they have to upgrade their coaching style, but yeah, I think he was forced out. I think the boosters had enough. 7-6 is not what they invested for, and it's just bad. Will he coach again on the D1 level?
I think he will. Yeah. I think he will. I think he'll take a year off, which is what he should have done after leaving Georgia. I think he'll take that year off, maybe get to the TV game, and I think he will come back not next year, than the 2021.
You know, I can get a guy on the phone now, Jay Henderson. He's my guy. He's my one of my good friends. He's actually a colleague at Georgia State University with me, and he's a huge Miami fan, and he'll tell you.
Oh, man.
Yeah, yeah, and we probably have to get him on the show one day just for that.
right?
Because he will go off and he will have a complete rant about why he's happy about Mark Red being gone. So and you know what? I agree with you, Leon. I think that it was kind of like a force of hand, like we're gonna go ahead and push you out of here. But another thing too, I think he was kind of. I want to add something to that. His son was there as well, was on the coaching staff.
Mm.
And they may have wanted to get rid, may have told him, hey, you need to get rid of your son. And because family comes first, he'd rather retire than to do that. Now, not to mention, listen, you've lost a lot of recruits here. And down there in the University of Miami, it is very important that you recruit some of that talent down there. They have some talented football players and have had that for the last 30 years.
Absolutely.
Okay, and if you miss on that, because you have to look at the state of the Miami Hurricanes, man, and where we came from. I remember watching them 2000, 2001, 2002, 2003. Ed Reed, Sean Taylor, rest his soul. Ken Dorsey was the quarterback there. Willis McGahee was the running back.
Right.
Andre Johnson is your wide receiver. Jonathan Vilma in the middle. These guys went on to play outstanding football. Some of those guys. Ken Dorsey didn't pan out so much in the NFL, but the other guys
Johnson.
Andre Johnson was a monster in his heyday, you know? These guys panned out to be very good, especially the guys on the defensive end. Ed Reed, we're talking about he'll be in the Hall of Fame.
That's what I'm saying. You know? Like Florida has a very rich tradition.
Exactly.
You better not miss out on those.
Florida,
groups.
Georgia, Texas, California. Those four, you better snatch up those guys.
Yes, sir.
In those four states. They've always ran the states as far as high school football go. Now, Rick, you guys were saying, you know, John, you said that he probably will be back in college football coaching. I think he will, but he has to change his philosophy. His philosophy is old school. It worked 10 years ago. It should work today. That's not the case.
No.
They're not lining up against you now unless you play in the Big Ten. They're not lining up against you. They're spreading you out. There's four or five guys, four or five receivers, and now they're running backs who can make catches like receivers now.
That's the
alarming part, man. And they had the talent there. You know, they have the talent. If you guys recall, at our college football preview show, I had them finishing in the top four.
That's true.
That's true.
Because I thought that they were going to be the team this year. And then they came out against LSU and they stunk up the place.
Right.
Yeah.
And you were like, okay, well, maybe LSU is going to be good. You know, that's what we look at when we see that first game. Are they going to be that good? And then you look at the other games they had. The Virginia loss was, I think the Virginia loss just completely just took them apart. Because that was the week after they beat Florida State.
Right.
And it was just kind of alarming. And to your second question, John, I don't know where they go. I really don't know where they would go from here, unless they say, "Hey, Ray Lewis."
That's my next point. Do they go in the Miami family? Do they stay in the Miami family, or do they go outside?
Well, if you stay in the Miami family, what do you want? Do you want a guy who's never really coached, or you know, like a Ray Lewis? Ray Lewis has never coached,
so right?
Do you want somebody like that, or do you want somebody who can coach these guys, who can coach these guys up? But you have to have that swagger, like Jimmy Johnson had when he coached them in the 80s. He had that Miami swagger. You already knew what time it was when he came out there, right? So it's kind of hard for me to say at this point where they would go and where they want to go, because somebody out there says, hey, that's my dream job. We just have to find out who it is.
Well,
and will that person bring in the schemes, the components necessary to compete at this level?
Exactly, because you have to upgrade your op. It's kind of like a computer system. You know, running that 2-3 wide receiver set, that's like so Windows 1 or 2 or 3. You know, we're in Windows 10 now.
Yeah.
It's iOS 10 now. People are running those 4 and 5 wide receiver sets. It is the football version of the 4 out.
Yeah.
People are looking to get rid of you in the second quarter.
Yep.
So, you know, especially with the rules becoming more lax on defense. Man, so, you know, with Mark Rip, unfortunately, like we were both saying, his playing style is just outdated. You can't just come with that 2002 scheme against 2018 talent.
Or to say another way, it's look at Georgia Tech. They're getting rid of their 1960 scheme by letting and getting Jeff Collins in. They're finally coming into the 21st century.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jeff Collins, I think he may turn this Georgia Tech team around. And I think a lot of teams in the ACC better watch out. I'm not going to say that he's going to just absolutely be a success coming in this year, because he still has to plug in his guys. He still has to plug in his players. Mind you, these are Paul Johnson's guys. Paul Johnson, the same Paul Johnson who ran the option scheme.
Right.
You know, the triple option scheme. So now you have to get those guys out of that mindset and bring Jeff Collins in, which I think he runs a spread, which probably every coach does. I think Georgia Southern might be the only other team that runs a triple option.
Exactly. Yes.
And I think Navy still runs it. So, you know, that's going to be the transition for Jeff Collins. I'm not saying he's going to change the culture next year. And mind you, they stunk up the joint in their bowl game.
Yes, they get it against Minnesota. Right.
You know, so you sometimes would think, guys, that when a coach is going out, you want to play all out for him, and you want to at least give that effort. Man, Georgia Tech and Miami did not do that.
No.
And that's what prompted the exit.
Yeah.
And so if the Boosters had an inkling of an idea about ousting Mark Rip, the last two games kind of put the stamp on it.
Yeah, it did.
And who does Georgia Tech start out next season with? Thursday night, August 29th, at Clemson.
At Clemson.
Oh, boy.
Good luck.
Yeah, good luck, Georgia Tech, on that one. And speaking of Clemson and Alabama, boy, did they just prove that they're men among boys right now.
Well, go ahead, John.
And I had a tweet yesterday on John_Morgo where I said, next season, let's just junk the college football playoff and make it Bama Clemson 2 out of 3.
So parity is not an option. Not in college.
And it's really not, man. I mean, when you think about it, first off, you break down this Clemson game. I mean, Notre Dame looked like they may have had a chance. They looked like they may have belonged there. And I've been listening to sports talk radio all the time saying, Notre Dame doesn't belong there. Notre Dame went undefeated this
12-0.
Year. You can't discredit them because it's Notre Dame and because of what they've done the last 5 or 6 years in a bowl game. Hell, they just can't win a bowl game. And they went up against a Clemson team who, by the way, did not have Dexter Lawrence, who to me is the best player on that team.
Exactly. You know? That's something that people are forgetting, that Dexter Lawrence wasn't there.
And he's not going to be there next Monday. Now, they're going to need him. No, they said he's not.
Okay.
They said he's not going to be there. He's not going to be in that game next Monday either. So, with that, but what I did see from him, he'll be on the sidelines, but what I did see from him was that his leadership, you know, he's still coaching, he's still like prepping up his players. You know, listen, there's still three guys on that defensive line who's still going to the NFL, okay? Mm-hmm. First round picks in the NFL draft, Christian Wilkins, one of the best defensive linemen in the country. So, and Trevor Lawrence, freshman quarterback, comes in, takes Kelly Bryant's job, right? Comes in like nothing is wrong, and boom, he's throwing touchdown passes.
Right.
You know, he's playing like he's been in the big game before, which he has, because just that pass, last year, Cartersville won the state title. He understood, listen, this is a different story, this is a different thing. And bam, there you go. Listen, for Notre Dame, they were just outmatched. I think that if you even would have put Ohio State in that game, the situation still would have been different. Clemson is just that good.
Exactly. Getting back to the Notre Dame situation, of course, a lot of Georgia fans on the timeline saying, "Oh no, you know, Georgia would have given Notre Dame a better game, or Georgia would have given them a better game. Georgia deserves to get in." I've got two things to say about that.
Yeah.
Number one, Notre Dame played Ball State. All other 11 teams, quality Power 5 squads regardless of what you say about Vanderbilt, yes, they're in the SEC. They count as a Power 5 team, and Vanderbilt almost beat them. Georgia, look who they had. They have Austin Peay.
Come on.
Middle Tennessee State. Let's go, Peay. Austin Peay, Middle Tennessee State, UMass. Right. Those teams do not compare to the talent that Notre Dame has. And if you've got a if you go 12-0 with Notre Dame's schedule, you deserve to get in. And I think that's all that is. I mean, look who Notre Dame has next season. They got Louisville. They're going to have New Mexico. They play at Georgia. And to me, for those Georgia fans, here's what you guys do: Saturday, September 21st, Notre Dame plays Georgia between the hedges. Georgia pummels Notre Dame.
Yeah.
55-3.
Yeah.
Build a time machine. And then go back in time with the results of that game, present it to the committee, and then you get in.
And then you get in.
Exactly.
There you go. But you also still have to win the SEC.
Right.
And you didn't do that because you also you also lost to LSU.
Right.
So they weren't going to let you in.
They weren't going to let you in regardless. They're not going to let a two-loss team in. They're not going to do that.
Over an unbeaten Notre Dame and a conference champion in Oklahoma.
Right.
Give me a break.
That's just not going to happen.
I'm going to be honest with you. I'm of the ilk that was like, why was Notre Dame even there? I'm not going to lie to you. I was like, man, they should just let Georgia in. But then at the same time, you can't discount what you just said.
Yeah, because think about this, Leon. Think about it this way. If anybody else, listen, the whole argument has been all year in college football, it is Alabama, Clemson, and then the rest of the country.
Yeah. Right.
So anybody else would have gotten in, even Georgia, it probably wouldn't even matter.
Man, I think when you walk down, like, what's the whole point? The first thing I said, what's the whole point of Notre Dame even going? Somebody smacks you like that. You know, but. Like, we were hoping for some type of, you know, I guess I was hoping for some type of parity. I was hoping for, like, a Notre Dame. I was hoping for, like, a Notre Dame-Oklahoma final.
Right.
Wasn't going to happen.
Nope.
You know.
I think we all were. And I think that when we talked about this the last time we was on the air, we were saying, man, what would be great is a Notre Dame-Oklahoma final if they could find a way to beat, you know, Alabama and Clemson respectively. But, I mean, I think we was just laying down, going to sleep, counting our sheeps in our sleep, and wishing and hoping that would happen.
See, I maintain that, you know, in order for something like that to happen next time,
mm-hmm.
I think it was it 2000 and, I mean, not to bring up the ghosts of the past.
Sure. Yeah.
But 2009, or it might have been 2010, you know, UGA led the country in arrest. Remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
And people were suspecting that Florida was behind that.
Yeah.
I mean, because they were banging up the students, the players for little stuff. Start running back, gets arrested for bumping a car in the parking lot, you know. So what I'm saying is that if I'm, you know, like an Oklahoma or Notre Dame, you go off and grease some palms in Alabama. You grease some palms in South Carolina, and you get those Clemson players off the field. You know, for a night, at least for questioning something. I'm not a wishing criminal records on anybody. I'm just talking about petty stuff, you know.
Right.
So we can get this parity that does not exist in college football.
Right. It's just, like I said, it's just Clemson and Alabama, and that's what it's going to be for the next 3 or 4 or 5, 6 years.
Man.
Because it's just going to build on itself.
It's going to build on itself. And then, as we switch gears to Alabama and the Oklahoma game, side note, Tua Tagovailoa's brother is coming. So, yeah, watch out for that, too, because he might be just as good as his brother.
Wow.
So, listen to this, though. Alabama, you start out the game 28-0. Now you've knocked down Oklahoma 3 times, but let's give Oklahoma credit. And let's give Kyler Murray credit here. That guy brought that team back into striking distance, but Alabama had enough to hold them off. And I think Alabama took that game a little personal yesterday simply because there was a lot of jabber-jaw, there was a lot of trash talk, and they felt like their quarterback should have won the Heisman and not Kyler Murray.
Well, we pretty much predicted that.
Yeah.
That would give Alabama enough of a motivation, and you don't want to give Nick Saban's crew any extra motivation.
Exactly.
And you saw where Kyler Murray was trying to get goaded into saying some stuff about Alabama, and he was just about to take the bait, then at the last second he pulled off.
But I'll say this, though, that I think both quarterbacks put on a show for us. They respect each other because they got to know each other a lot in New York for the Heisman Trophy ceremony. They respect each other, but, man, listen, Alabama is just too far ahead of the curve here, and they're just way too good, man. They were just way too good. You could have put Notre Dame down there, and Notre Dame would have lost the same way.
Oh, exactly.
You know, well, I don't know. Notre Dame probably would have lost a lot worse. But, you know, but, I mean, with Tonga Valoa throwing four touchdown passes to three incompletions, I mean, come on, man. That's just remarkable. You have more touchdown passes than incompletions. Folks, sit down and look at those numbers, okay? and just kind of
wrap
your head around it.
Yeah.
So, if you're an NFL scout, I mean, you know, being that he's had more touchdown passes than completions in that particular game, do we believe that this type of style, his style of play, will translate on the next level?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, because, mind you, he can throw the football. In the NFL, they're looking to see who can throw the football accurately.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it's not just about your running ability because, yeah, Tonga Valoa can take off and Absolutely. He can run. But, man, the thing that impressed me the most about him is his accuracy. He can throw the deep ball better than anybody I've seen in a long time in college football. And just his mechanics and his awareness on the field. He know where every receiver is located. And, you know, not to mention he had a pretty decent offensive line, too. So, you know, I always say that anybody who has an offensive line is a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, and that's exactly. And that's why I was wondering, you know, like, because he has all the bells and whistles going for him in Alabama. Mm-hmm. That when he is drafted, I'm pretty sure he's going to go pretty high.
Yeah.
He will not be drafted to the NFL equivalent of Alabama.
No, that's the whole point. And I'm sure he's going to be there, what, at least another year?
Another year.
Mm-hmm. And then so you're looking at maybe the class of 2020 that he'll be coming out. Because right now, as we turn to the NFL, the last week of the regular season, I really don't see a team that is just desperate for a quarterback.
Jacksonville.
All right, Jacksonville, okay. That's probably one. And what about and we're trying to talk about our hometown Falcons, who picked the absolutely worst time to go on a 3-game winning streak.
Yes, they did. I just read something today with their win. They just won. They won it the last seconds today. Congrats to them. But with that win, they actually dropped from 7th to 14th
right.
in the draft. Oh, so
is that a win worth getting?
3-game winning streak, 7-9, a team that should have been 12-4. You know, if you get about five of those games back, Cleveland, we should have beat the Saints the first time, probably. And a lot of people would probably argue that we should have beat the Saints twice.
Yeah.
You know, we finished 4-2 in the division, which is crazy.
Right.
But, you know, you have to get those outside wins, man. Those non-conference wins, they add up. But we went 0-4 against the AFC North. We were not able to pick up a single victory against them, man. And that's tough to swallow. We beat Arizona. We were supposed to beat them. So, right. I mean, because they have dead last. They have the worst offense in the NFL. So,
and what were we, 1-3 against the NFC East? Or were we 0-4 against them as well?
No, we were 1-3 because
we beat the Giants.
Beat the Giants on Monday night. Right. No, we were 2-2 because we beat the Redskins.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's the other. I knew there was
the second best victory we had of the year.
Right. You know, that was right off the bye.
Yeah. And then what we did there. We went to 500, and everybody was all of a sudden like, okay, and that was Julio Jones' first touchdown, mm-hmm. and everybody all of a sudden was like, oh, man, here we go. Okay, we're about to make a run here.
And then the bottom fell off
the following week against Cleveland, at Cleveland, which is, by the way, the Cleveland Browns. First time in a long time we've talked about them.
Baker Mayfield.
They might do something next year. Baker Mayfield, they found their guy, finally.
Go ahead.
No, you're right. It took them a long time, but Baker Mayfield certainly does have all the intangibles needed to be that quarterback that Cleveland needs.
A long time is an understatement. The best quarterback that Cleveland had since they just replaced Bernie Kosar.
Yeah.
shout out to Cleveland.
Oh, Bernie doggone Kosar, right?
Right.
It took about. Almost 30 years?
Almost 30 years. Might have been at 30 years.
My goodness.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have to, and I called this a little earlier, I think we all called it, but if you're Minnesota, whoa, are heads going to roll in the Minnesota Vikings front office?
You think so?
You think so?
They just missed the playoffs.
Yeah, they did. They just missed the playoffs. The Eagles got the six.
Man, and so do you wish you would have had your receipt on this man?
Well, historically, Monday is known as Black Monday in the NFL. That's tomorrow. How many coaches do you think are going to get the axe?
Ooh, how many head coaches?
Head coaches.
Man,
I know one off the top of my head.
Which one?
Marvin Lewis.
Marvin Lewis. If Marvin Lewis doesn't get fired, I can't wait to see First Take in the morning because I just want to see what Stephen A. Smith's going to say.
He's going to
blow a casket. But, no, John, you're absolutely right, man. Marvin Lewis should go.
Or at least get rid of Hugh Jackson and say, all right, Hugh, you're a nice guy, but you ain't an NFL
you
coach. You ain't one. I'm
and
sorry.
I hate to say it, too, man. He's such a great guy. But great guys just don't get
it. They
don't get it, man.
Keep losing like him. He gets hired. He gets fired from the Browns, hired by the Bengals, and the Bengals go into the tank. I mean.
There's another guy who, oh, my goodness. I hate to say this. I really do. But you guys better watch it on Monday. Mike Tomlin might be gone, too. After all of this, after all of the turmoil that has happened. See, this has happened under his watch.
Right.
You know, you didn't – well, the GM's probably going to get axed for not bringing back Le'Veon Bell.
No,
that's one. That's one. But, two, you still have to keep your players in-house. There was just too much going on in-house. And I believe the locker room may have been divided because of this. And anybody who has a division in locker room, that is up to the head coaches. That is up to the head coaches. Leon, you're looking at your score from your Chargers. They still are 5 seed. Yeah, because the Chiefs actually obliterated John Gruden's Oakland Raiders today. Mike Tomlin, I think that's going to probably be the story to watch out for as well.
There's still hope for Mike.
There is, though.
Because, you know, the Rooneys, they really don't like new people around. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at, they only had 3 coaches in 50 years.
Right.
And, you know, if anything, you know, I would blame the GM. And plus, on top of that, you know, Cleveland is still potentially going to win against Baltimore right now. The ball is on Baltimore's 39 with 1:35 left in the fourth quarter.
Oh, my goodness. Wait a minute.
And the Steelers won today.
Yeah. If the Steelers win,
which they did,
and if the Ravens lose, remember this.
Yeah, because they'll flip flop again.
This happened last year.
Absolutely,
this happened last year, and boy, that means the Ravens would miss the playoffs.
And Cleveland has
the number one defense in the NFL misses the playoffs.
I mean, you know, it can happen.
Yeah,
but Cleveland has no qualms about if we're missing the playoffs, you're missing the playoffs too.
Right.
But Cleveland actually is going to. I mean, you know, 8-7, which is equivalent to 9-7, potentially
8-7-1. It's a good. It's a good season, man.
Well, for rookie quarterback,
yeah.
I didn't see it coming.
Nobody did.
I don't think anybody did.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, I didn't think they were. I didn't think they were really on point with. I thought they were sabotaging. Or I'll be honest, I thought they were sabotaging their own season. I didn't believe in the whole we're adding by subtracting by firing your coach, benching Tyrod. And getting rid of Josh Gordon, but evidently they knew something I didn't.
Yeah,
because we look how everything panned out. So it's big shout out to Cleveland Browns and big shout outs to the city of Cleveland for having something to celebrate.
So I'm looking at the possible matchups here in the AFC. The Houston Texans are the number 3. They would take on the winner of the Colts Titans game tonight. The winner of that game will clinch that final playoff spot. In the NFC, the matchups are already set. Seattle, Dallas, Philadelphia, Chicago. We talking about some great matchups next weekend, man, for wild card weekend. Talking about some great matchups.
And it is 4th and 10 right now on the Baltimore 39. They are in field goal range.
It's a 56-yard field goal they have to attempt.
Which is an NFL field goal.
Yeah, it is.
It is.
Nowadays, yeah. They're kicking them from 60 now.
Yes, sir. So we're looking at if Cleveland makes this field goal,
mm-hmm.
Pittsburgh does go to the playoffs, and Mike Tomlin will rest easy tonight. But if Cleveland misses this field goal, it's going to be a very difficult Monday.
Yeah, it is.
It is. What about in Denver, Vance Joseph?
Vance Joseph, I think, is this his second year?
I don't know if it's second or his first.
No, it's first or second.
I think Denver needs anything. You know, I think Denver needs to fire their GM.
Yeah.
Elway.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Man.
Elway has shown himself to be the kind of guy who thinks he knows quarterbacks other than himself. I think Elway, what he's trying to do, he's going to talk to one of the...
That's it. The Ravens have won it.
It's going to be a difficult Monday.
Yeah.
I think Elway is one of those guys where what he's really trying to do is trying to find some sort of doctor who will turn back his clock so he makes him 30 again.
Yeah, so he can get back out there.
Exactly. Because it's seemed that Elway just can't draft a good quarterback. Can't get a good quarterback.
Yeah, that's right. And he's had so many issues. He thought he had it with Paxton Lynch. He thought he had it when he brought Brock Osweiler in. And he just can't get it done. Who's over there now? Who's the quarterback now?
They have, like, who's the gentleman that came from Minnesota?
Teddy Bridgewater?
No, they have Case Keenum.
Case Keenum.
So it was a good idea that he had. It's a very good idea.
Well, yeah, because Minnesota went to the AFC, the NFC Championship last year with Case Keenum. But, you know, I don't know.
Who's seen it coming? Nobody seen it coming. Case didn't see it in the fact that he's thinking he's probably still shell-shocked that he's not wearing purple and gold.
I don't think. It, you know what? Vance Joseph's job could be in jeopardy, but that's going to be a tough one.
I mean,
I will say who else's jobs I've heard, I've been hearing reports about it. It's not Dan Quinn's, but it's his coordinators. Both of them.
Yes.
Marquand Manuel and Steve Sarkisian. Even though I don't know about the Sarkisian one. And some folks will tell me that really we don't know about the Marquand Manuel one because of the injuries that we had on that defensive side.
Yeah, I think he'll get a free pass.
Yeah.
But I think Sarkisian might be gone.
You think Sarkisian's gone?
And I just saw a notice here that Cotter over at Tampa Bay was dismissed.
Dirk Cotter.
Yeah.
Okay. I forgot about him too. I knew he was going to get ready to go. You start off the season 3-0. And you raise eyebrows a little bit, and just fall off. You know.
Speaking of that, what about Ron Rivers over in Carolina? Rivera in Carolina.
They've came out and said that they're not going to let him go.
Yeah. Okay.
I thought that they were. I really did because I thought he lost control of the team.
Cam was injured though, and everybody knew. He tried to play through it.
Defense was giving up. Yeah. The defense that was once ranked number one in the league was giving up yards, man. He was giving up a lot of yards per game.
But the running attack wasn't really should have been. Yeah. They're on the field too often. They're like the direct opposite of Baltimore. Like, when you look at a Baltimore team, you know, they are masters of the clock. They just run on you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, with Carolina, they couldn't do anything.
Right.
You couldn't run. And the scout, if we knew that Cam was hurt, the opposing defenses knew Cam was hurt.
Right.
So they got to get Cam Newton healthy for this next season. All right. Well, this is the last, this is our year-end review episode. So what we're going to do for the last 3 minutes, turn it around to all our contributors and see what they want to talk about as they wrap up sports here in 2018.
Well, I'm a bit of a homer. So I'm to a certain degree, you know, do I say to a certain degree because this team is up the freeway from where I'm from, but I'm going to touch on the Lakers. We have a situation right now where Luke Walton is under investigation. He is under scrutiny. LeBron James is out. That's the safety hump. That's the safety blanket.
Yeah.
He's sitting down. And I'm pretty sure that, you know, the growing is something that we have to take our time on. You know, I thought stigmata was going to happen when I seen LeBron James get hurt. You know, so it's like, but at the same time, I'm pretty sure he wants to come back. But I think management is telling LeBron just to hold on for a sec. We want to see something.
They want to see, yeah.
We want to see something. We just lost to the Kings, people. That doesn't happen. And then we get ran by the Clippers. That Magic said he wasn't going to fire Luke Walton this year in 2018.
Okay.
But
2019 is in about 30 hours.
Yes. Yes. He is under, we're looking at, can you really coach? You know, can you really coach in this league?
By the way, happy birthday to LeBron James. Turns 34 years young today.
Yes, sir. Still dominating. Still dominating. But we're going to see if Luke Walton can really coach, because we have, and Brent, is Brandon Ingram really that guy? So it's a lot going on right now. I think LeBron will come back he'll probably come back next week. But it's going to be they're going to get 5 games for Luke Walton to sit back and see, can you really coach in this league? Are you was Golden State an aberration? Which it was. I'm gonna be honest with you, but that's my take on that, sir.
All right. So we've had a great year. We started our podcast this year, so this has been very exciting, very fun to do this, and I hope that we continue to do this. But we've also had a great year in sports. Just to run down a few things we saw this year. We saw the Warriors win it again. We saw the Eagles win the Super Bowl. We saw Ovechkin finally get his Stanley Cup. We even saw the U.S. men's curling team win a gold medal. Ohtani lights up the mound and the bat for the Anaheim Angels, for the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Sorry. Rafael Nadal wins his 11th French Open title. But there's one thing that happened that's been dear to my heart. And I've been saying this for years. I've always had, like, somewhat of a sports bucket list, okay, on places that I want to visit and things that I want to see. I want to see the Falcons win the Super Bowl. I want to go to the Pro Football Hall of Fame during Hall of Fame weekend.
Falcons win the Super Bowl. So you say you want to be immortal.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, just throwing that out there.
The XFL will be back. I meant to mention guy.
Shout out to Jimmy Bass.
Yeah, right. Back. But
he hate me.
Oh, I was about to say that. You beat me to it. You beat me to it.
He hate me. But the one thing that I got out of, I think, the best championship performance, and the one thing that I always wish that I would see before I passed away, and I did see it 3 years ago, was when American Pharoah won the Triple Crown. But never in a million years would I thought I would have seen 2 Triple Crown winners. Justify. Of course, it took 37 years for us to see American Pharoah win it. The last one who won it was affirmed in 1978. Folks, this is horse racing I'm talking about. Yes, if you don't know, I'm a huge horse racing fan. In 2020, I'm actually taking my wife, my mother-in-law, and my mother to the Kentucky Derby.
Oh, he's taking the whole family.
I'm taking the van with me into Louisville to watch the Kentucky Derby in 2020. And I'm marking it right here on this show. But I want to say congratulations to Justify. Yeah, he's not going to hear me.
He's a horse.
He's a horse. So who cares, though, right? Justify winning the Triple Crown. That's a tough thing for horses to do because of the distance. The distance gets long, and then it shortens, and then it gets longer. So, tough thing. We only talk about horse racing 3 times a year. Kentucky Derby, Preakness, and Belmont Stakes. But Justify, kudos to you, man.
All right, well, it's been kind of a weird year for me. In terms of, it seems like I was stuck on the set of Final Destination.
Yep.
Got hit by a car, fell down, and cracked my knee open in Arkansas. My father had heart surgery. My mom just broke her wrist. And
your mom broke her wrist?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, fell and broke
this
her.
This is more
fell and broke her wrist. So it's just been a very, very strange year for me. Got to do a lot of things. Got to travel to Miami. Got to travel to Houston to do some games. Again, I'm on 94.1 HD2, and I even have my own open. So that's definitely it's kind of a good and the bad kind of thing. And I've always been the kind of person to look forward to things happening in the following year, and I've got some real interesting things going on in the following year that I can't wait to tell you about, and I don't want to kind of spoil things by doing things like that in terms of where hopefully I'll be winding up. Might be going back down to Miami for football. It's just going to be a very, very weird year, and I couldn't have done it without all the support I've been given, both from my family, from Daniel, from Leon, the staff over at Georgia State helping me out, Will Owens, their sports information director, Tim Adams, the trainer, and over at Reinhardt, Mike DeVader, their sports information guy, Bill Pop, their athletic director, who Leon knows, or not, sorry, Daniel knows, as I've been joking mildly, looks a little like Joe Pesci from Casino.
And that's one of my favorite movies.
And so it's just, like I said, it's just been a weird year. And you got to take it. It's been good on a lot of instances. It's been bad in a lot of instances. I'm just glad that I've been able to get on the other side of things with everybody still basically intact in one piece. And I want to thank my family. I want to thank everybody. And I want to thank you out there listening to us and supporting us, because without you, we'd just be talking to ourselves. All right, that's going to wrap us up here. We'll be back next week to talk about the first weekend of wild card football and preview the Clemson-Alabama national title. So you joined us in 2018. Please still stay with us in 2019. We'll be sure to make it worth your while. I'm John Morgo for
Leon Brown.
And
2019, we're coming for you. Daniel Bolton.
Again, thank you very much for listening to the last three guys to do a podcast. I want to thank our guest head coach, Gene Hill, the Georgia State Panthers women's basketball team. And have a good New Year's Eve. More importantly, have a safe New Year's Eve. If you have anything to drink, call a cab, call Lyft, call Uber. We want to make sure that you see the new year in one piece as well. So for everyone, have a good night, everybody.